Okay, so we are, as I said, on Tet Vav Amud Bet, and we'd been sort of working our way through this previous Mishnah, which was fine, right? So we'd had this previous section. Basically, we've been talking a lot about what they call Palganiska Knossa, Palganiska Mamuna. That's the Aramaic version. Chatzi Nezek, when you pay half damages, is it Nezek or is it Mamun? Is it considered to be a penalty payment or is it considered to be the actual damages? You're getting a little bit of a let off. And towards the end, so I guess maybe we'll just start off with this. Where is it? We talked about the... Oh, here. We basically ended off by asking a question. So about halfway down, Tet Vav Amud Bet, we had asked what we thought was quite a strong question on the opinion of Chatzi Nezek Knas, right? We thought that we'd sort of thrown out that opinion. And then the next word in the Gemara was Hilchasa, that actually that's the opinion we follow in terms of Halacha. We follow the opinion that says it's a Knas, so it is considered to be a penalty payment. It's not considered to be a regular payment. So we had this whole thing, the Gemara explained that basically, okay, it wasn't such a strong question, it wasn't the most difficult question, and therefore that's okay, not such a problem. And so we'll just go from, it's almost exactly halfway down. We say, Hai Kalba. We're talking about a dog, right? Hai Kalba de Ochal Imri, Vashunra de Ochla Tarnagola, Mashunahu, Velo Magabinon Bebovel. So again, once we paskin, once the halacha is following the opinion that Chatzin Ezek is a knas, is a penalty payment, so it can't be taken, I'm sure we mentioned this last time, it can't be taken in Bovel, that penalty payment can't be taken outside of the land of Israel, because it requires smuchin, dayanim smuchin, means they require the old style of smicha, which had to only be given in Israel, which was, again, an unbroken chain from Moshe. What we call smicha nowadays is really better termed in the Gemara as heter hora. It's like you're allowed to suggest halacha, but it's not really the same thing as smicha, and there are certain halachas which require smicha, and one of them is giving penalty payments for a bet din to give a knas, a penalty payment. You can't do it. A beis din can say this is what's owed, right? This is what you should be paying based on damages, or based on contracts or whatever it is, those sorts of things, but based on can say, but a based on can't give a penalty payment nowadays in the same way, and even in those days couldn't do it outside of Israel. So they said you can't claim on this, as we say, this kelev, this, if you had a dog which ate a sheep or a cat which ate a large chicken, then that would be considered a penalty payment, because it's chatzin as a knas, it's an unusual thing, very surprising to eat such a, you know, to go for an animal in that way. And therefore that's Chatzi Nezek. And the Gemara responds to that and says, "V'hani mili barav revi aval bezutri urchehi." So although that's talking about large animals, larger sheep or a large chicken, but if you're talking about a little one, then it is common. Obviously, it depends on the size of the dog and the cat, presumably as well, right? To a little poodle, then it's unusual, presumably unlikely to be going for a sheep. But again, you're getting very very large dogs. That obviously are going to be going for small animals as well, certainly wild dogs. And actually, we'll come back to in the next Mishnah a little bit. We'll mention differences between domesticated versus not domesticated. You know, whether that makes a difference or not, right? What about if you say you have an animal that is domesticated? Okay, so we'll come back to that in the next Mishnah. But this Brisa continues and says, "Itofas lo mafkinon mine." But if it grab hold of it, if you manage to take the money, then you can't. Then it can't be taken away. So if I, as the nizak, I as the damaged party, feel that I am owed for this sheep that your animal has eaten. So what about if I then go and manage to take the money from you? Right? So once I've got it, that's what the mission says, right? Because in a sense you should be owed it. You can't technically claim it in Bet Din anymore. But once you've got it, then you're gonna keep it. So that's a very interesting sugya. That comes up a number of times in the Gemara, the idea of tfisa, where you could take something which in a sense might be owed to you, but because of a technicality you can't actually claim it. If you manage to get hold of it, then you're then you're allowed to keep it. Okay, it comes up in the realm of kohuna as well, in the realm of priesthood. There's a very famous sugya in Bava Metzia called Tokfo Kohen. If a Kohen, took something, then again that may apply. So for instance, truma nowadays, right? Truma, you don't give truma to a Kohen nowadays. Oh, it's not such a good example actually, because there's a prohibition on the Kohen also to eat truma because they're impure and things like that. But let's say something which, as I said, something you which should be owed to you, but you can't claim because of a technicality. If you get it, then we don't take it away from you. Nevertheless, the Gemara is still not pleased with that. Yes.
Almost
like turning your ransom thing. Why? The
animal that did the damage, and then you're saying, I'm not going to give it back to you until you pay me damage.
Well, no, it only works in a case where that is a legitimate claim.
Yeah.
That's the point. Right. Meaning in other cases it's not going to work. You can't just seize an animal and say, I want this, I want that, and I'm not going to do it. That the Beis Din is not going to enforce. But the point is, over here, if there was a technical reason why you weren't able to. I mean, even this case is not a great example of that. The Gemara is actually going to reject it. But in halacha, the person who is holding onto something tends to have the upper hand. That's always a significant thing when you have the money already.
But this isn't like a lien, though. This is like physically saying your dog just attacked my sheep. I'm hanging on to your dog.
Oh, so that's the response of the Gemara. We haven't got to that part yet. At the moment, we're talking about, let's say, you've taken. I think so far we understand at the moment. Maybe that is. Oh, is that how they? I thought that was the latest. Okay, so you mean he's talking about the? That's how they translate it. I thought v'itovas means that you take the money, not that you take the animal. V'itovas lemav kinuine. He did what? Sorry, he took the.
The injured party sees the property of the owner.
Sees the property of the owner. Yeah.
They're talking about here. This is interpreted as he's taken the actual animal itself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, interesting. I thought that's the unusual explanation.
If it takes too much, you can't keep.
Correct, exactly. Okay, but even still, we don't usually. Okay, so that's an interesting machlokas. I don't think everybody agrees with that. With whether you've actually. Whether you've taken the animal or not. Oh, this is in Tosus, I think, here, over here. So where is it? V'itofas.
It says
Rebbein Tam. Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah, so it's this bottom Tosus over here that he's talking about. Dafka itofas hamazik atzmo kugun hakelev ashunra. That's what you've got to take. Then lemavkino ine. Right? Then they allow you to keep the amount. Right, but if you just take money, if you just take something else, then that's no, that doesn't actually count. And again, because this is a penalty payment, that's the point. Usually, tfisa, grabbing hold of something, or keeping money, doesn't work for penalty payments. That only works for what you're actually owed. The way we're viewing penalties, I think the point is like this: when we're talking about the difference between momon and knas, between something being owed and something being a penalty payment, what it means is that in a sense you're getting lucky. As the nizak, you're getting extra. You shouldn't be getting anything, right? Because this is unusual, it was your I guess you're getting unlucky because something's happened to your animal. But in a sense, the party, the mazik, the damager, or the owner of this animal doesn't actually owe you anything. The Beit Din is giving them a penalty. And once it's giving them a penalty, so that penalty happens to be going to you, right? In the same way that if... maybe it's easier to think of it in terms of the theft, okay? Let's say we're talking about a ganav, right? Where you pay double payment. The second amount is clear that you steal my watch. My watch is worth £1,000. You do it in a way which makes you a ganav. You owe £2,000, right? Now, £1,000 is coming back to me because it's owed to me. The other £1,000, what are you going to do with it, right? Beis Din doesn't take that because, again, that's not the way Beis Din functions, right? You might have said penalty payments. I don't know how they work now in the UK. It could be penalty payments paid to the court or paid to the crown or wherever it is. I don't know. But in halacha, penalty payments are paid to the other party, right? That's where they're going. So in a sense, you're getting lucky, right? Now, if your penalty payments, if you're getting that, then that's great, right? If Beis Din's able to enforce that. But if not, you can't just go and grab another £1,000. It's not owed to you in that sense. sense, it's a penalty on the damager, and therefore, if they are unable to pay it because of a technicality, you can't simply go and take it. Whereas money that's owed to you, itofas, if you have managed to get hold of it, then you're going to be able to keep it. So here we've ended up in a bit of a strange situation where we are saying you can keep it. So it's a little bit of an odd one, right? Because v'yamar kav luzimni da azilna la'ara di Yisrael kav inon le. Again, this was in a time where you could go to Israel. You could, well, obviously you can go to Israel now, but you can't. But there's no smuchim there. There's no Beit Din that's allowed to do this penalty payment. Whereas in those times, you could say, I'd like to take you to the Beit Din in Israel where we can actually get this penalty payment. And in that sense, I'm going to that's what we should do. And if not, you're going to end up in Cherem. Yes.
Can a secular court now in Israel award pecuniary damages?
Maybe I should have been clearer. A court, to an extent, can do. Okay, let's put it like this: the halachic penalty payments are, meaning the ones that are mandated by the halacha, are only given out in a court that has smuchim, right? That has these types of dayan. Any legal system that halacha recognizes that any legal system can set its own rules. So, for instance, it's a little bit falls within the concept of what's called hefka based in hefka, which means a based in can, in a sense, apportion money any way it wants, you know, within reason. So, for instance, you know, if we have a system in the shul where we say these are the rules, you know, this is what's going to happen, and then someone violates the rules, you know, you say I don't know, whatever it is, if you step on my toe, then you owe me a fiver or whatever it is. So those, if everyone subscribes to that, then that's the system. So a secular court in Israel is a court with a mandate, right? Meaning that the government and people who choose to live in Israel have agreed to follow the law, you know, by being there, etc. And therefore, they're allowed to do that. Yes, so in that sense, they are allowed to do it. They're not applying it in the sense of a halachic knas. That is simply them's the rules type of thing. It's like it's a system which you agree to. So it's a little bit of a different type of thing. Okay, so then, v'ilo ozil m'shamtinan le, if he doesn't go, gets put in the cheirim, uvenkach, the Gemara responds, either way, he should be put into this cheirim m'shamtinan le, or you give him some sort of pressure, addu m'salek hazeka, until he pays back the penalty, midah Rabbi Nosson, and this is what I wanted to get to, okay, where the Gemara basically concludes and says, either way, he needs to get pressure in order to sort out Adam Masalik Hezeka until he removes the source of this damage, i.e. now we know. So again, we've been talking about whether this whether the payment is a kanas or is mamon. Okay, fine, the payment is one thing, but either way, this person is doing wrong by keeping an animal or by having this animal in a way which is dangerous to other people, right? And this is where we sort of briefly left off at the end, and maybe we'll see this. Actually, let's see the brisa first, and then we'll talk about it. So the Gemara quotes a proof from a brisa. It says, "Detanya Rabbi Nosson Omer." This is the opinion of Rabbi Nosson, which again seems to be accepted. Minayin shalo yegadel odom kelev ra besoich beiso. From where do we know what is the source for the fact that a person shouldn't raise a bad dog, you know, a dangerous dog, well, let's say for our purposes, in their home? Va'al ya'amid sulam ra'ua besoich beiso. You shouldn't keep a rickety ladder, right, one that is dangerous, in your home. Talmud lomar lo sasim domim beveisecha. You shouldn't. The literal translation shouldn't put blood in your house. That's a pasuk in Parashas Ki Tse, and this is a very, very important source when it comes to nezek, when it comes to damages and the prohibition of those damages. And I think what I wanted to clarify is, a lot of the time in Bava Kamma we're talking about payment, when you're liable to pay, when you're not liable to pay. But there's also a general requirement, aside from the payment that's required, that you should be careful, right? You should be trying to be safe. You should try, you know, you should be avoiding these damages. And this is a prohibition in the Torah. Prohibition in the Torah to sort of to keep things that are dangerous, or to have situations which are dangerous. You know, like it's a responsibility to try and do that, even if you have a technicality which you can get out of, right? Even if you have that technicality, so we have a responsibility wherever we are, whether it's our home or our shul or wherever it is. You know, to try and maintain those standards of safety. And I think one of the most famous examples, this is the source for it. This pasuk, when it talks about lo sosim dovim v'vesecha in Parshas Kisete, is talking about a particular mitzvah, which I'm sure people have heard of, but maybe just worth spending a moment talking about it. And that is the mitzvah of what we call a ma'akeh, right? Everyone familiar? So a ma'akeh, there's a special commandment in the Torah that if you have a flat roof, right, or if you have a roof where people, even a balcony, right, any sort of place, raised place where people can go, you have a requirement, a Torah requirement, to put a fence around it, right? So that is both a, as with many mitzvot, sometimes you'll have it phrased in the positive, sometimes you'll have it phrased in the lo sa'aseh, right? It's not really negative, it's a bad translation, in the lack of action, right? In the avoidance of action. So this is phrased in both ways. It says, v'asiso ma'akeh legagecha, you should make this ma'akeh, right? If you have the type of roof, you are required to make a fence. And then lo sosim dovim v'vesecha, again, you have to avoid having this sort of blood on your hands, you know, to sort of avoid having dangerous situations. So everybody, the second one is obviously much more, more broadly encompassing, will include many other things, will include things like our Mishnah says, you know, like having a dangerous dog, right, or like having a dangerous ladder, or all those sorts of things. But the ma'akeh is obviously a much more explicit version of this, and is spelled out by the Torah itself. So it's a very interesting mitzvah, because then you have this big debate amongst other authorities that when you have a ma'akeh, this requirement for a ma'akeh, does that mean that your requirement for a ma'akeh is simply to remove the damage, or is it an actual mitzvah? Right? Is it an actual mitzvah? So what's the difference? So there's a few differences. So let's think about it. When you have a mitzvah, right? So you have something like a lulav or tefillin or something like that, right? You make a bracha on it, right? But if you're doing something just to remove the damage, right? Let's say you have a ladder which is a bit rickety, right? You don't make a bracha on selling that ladder. I mean, now that you've got rid of the ladder, turning it into scrap. The ladder's no longer usable in a safe way. So once you sell it, you should make a bracha. You don't make a bracha on that. That you're right. You're accomplishing this commandment of avoiding having something dangerous in your house, but you don't make a bracha on that, right? You don't make a bracha in the same way. But a ma'akeh, according to many, according to almost everybody, I think, you make a bracha on it, right? I'll give you a better example. This is very relevant. I don't remember. Ashek Deshan b'mitzvah of Alasias Ma'akeh or something along those lines. Yeah, well, I don't remember the exact phraseology, but presumably it's something like that. Yeah, in the same way that we say again, Ashek Deshan b'mitzvah of Tzivanu Likbo Amezuzah, right, to put up the mezuzah or something like that. So again, it's the same thing over here. But I'll give you a better example. If you, or a better difference, I should say. Let's say you're building a house. We refer to it as I'm building a house, right? But I'm not building the house. Who's building the house? The builders, right? Whoever's building the house. So a lot of the time, the builders are not Jewish, right? So if the builders are not Jewish, can they accomplish this mitzvah or not, right? If it's a mitzvah, the builders can't put up your mezuzah for you. Right, that doesn't work. You have to take it off and put it back on because it requires someone who's actually required to do the mitzvah to do it on your behalf. You can employ someone to do it on your behalf if they are required to do the mitzvah. So you can ask a Jew to do it because they are also part of the mitzvah of the mezuzah. They can say the words Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvah tov. You know, they can. It's not that they can say the bracha, but the point is put up the mezuzah because they are required to do so. But if a ma'akeh is a full mitzvah, so maybe you can't ask the builders to do it. Maybe that part you have to do yourself. You tell them leave out the stuff, and I'm going to sort of put the railings in and put the fences in. So very interestingly, we have a situation where actually many say you do have to make a bracha, or at least if you were doing it yourself, you would make a bracha. But yet you can have non-Jews put this up. That it's almost like, although it is a mitzvah, it's such a goal-oriented mitzvah rather than an action-oriented mitzvah, meaning it's the result rather than the process, right? Whereas other things are much more process-oriented. Wearing tefillin, clearly the putting of tefillin on is the goal, rather than the goal being I wore tefillin already, this morning, in a sense, right? So in that sense, you. It's such a result-oriented mitzvah that you can, according to many, you can actually employ someone to do it. And I saw I don't remember who it was. I saw someone mention that I thought this was a great difference between the two. That if it's a mitzvah, then you have to be careful how you use it. You have a menorah, right? Like a chanukiah, let's say, right? Now, the chanukiah doesn't have any special status per se, but you use it for a mitzvah. Because you use it for a mitzvah, you have to treat it in a certain way. You couldn't use it to hold flowers or things like that or whatever. You should use it only for, or you shouldn't use it for bizayon, for something which is not so nice. You have to throw it away basically you shouldn't throw it away with all the sort of peels and things like that. So you should, often we wrap things. The most common one is tzitzis. Tzitzis end up getting thrown away a lot. They don't last so long, so you should ideally wrap it up or something before you throw it away. But it doesn't require being buried. It doesn't require being buried. Things which are used for a mitzvah. So maybe the ma'akeh is the same thing. I saw someone suggest that for a ma'akeh, when you have this fence, you have to be careful how you use it. Maybe you wouldn't be allowed to hang. I'm trying to think what you'd do in a bizarre way. You can use it for other things, but you can't. But you shouldn't use it for it has to be done derech kovod, right, in a sort of more respectful way. Anyway, so just a lot of interesting stuff that comes out of this. As I said, it was only really one line at the end of our Gemara, but it does really open up for us this concept of trying to avoid of a requirement to actively avoid causing damage, right? We're often dealing with the after effects. Once the damage has been caused, who's liable, who's not, do you have to pay, do you not have to pay? That's the after effect. But here is this very brief line of a requirement to avoid the damage. And so I just wanted to spend a little bit of time on that as well. And and then we can move on to the next Mishnah. Oh, the only other thing I was going to mention, I can't remember every answer. David, you asked about about goading an animal a couple of weeks ago. Did we come back to that? Oh, it was you who asked about the goading animal. Okay, someone asked. So the Rav Shechter was here last week. I didn't actually have a chance to look it up because I took him, only asked him on the way to the airport. But so I have to find it inside. But he said for sure you wouldn't be liable. If someone goaded your animal to cause damage, then for sure you wouldn't be liable. And I asked him what a source would be for that, and he paused for thought. I can't remember. He quoted a Mishnah later on which talks about cause. It was actually similar to what Rav Horn talked about, if anyone was there, where he talked about let's say a person goes to sleep and you come and put a you put your barrel or your jug next to the person, they roll over and smash it. While once they're already asleep, you put it next to them. So that's what we call pshiat hanizak, right? It's the negligence of the damaged party. You were foolish for putting it right next to a sleeping person. So you, in a sense, caused that damage, and that's why they're going to be exempt. So it wasn't that Gemara he quoted, but it was a similar one where, again, if you're basically acting in a foolish way, or you're doing something which is inviting the damage, then it's going to be basically it's your responsibility, and you're not going to the damager is not going to be liable as a result of that. So anyway, it's difficult. It's a difficult one to apply in practice, actually, because let's say my dog damages your cat. Was the cat goading him or not? Like, to an extent, you might say like his very existence sometimes, is goading him. Like, I don't know what the how you would apply that in practice. But either way, okay. So let's So I think what we're going to come on to in this Mishnah, very interestingly, is something we haven't really talked about, which are the exceptions, right? We keep talking about tum, right? The fact that animals are going to be only pay half damages for if they attack. At least if they attack, right? Not if they eat, but if they attack the first couple of times because it's unexpected. What do you mean it's unexpected, right? If you have a pet lion, then it's not so unexpected. That's what the Mishnah says. Okay, so that's what the Mishnah, that's what our Mishnah is going to go talk about. And this is now, I think we're nearing the end of the first parak, actually, unless I'm mistaken. Not so close. Okay, it's not till Yud Zayin. All right, yeah. So another duff and a half, or so, until the end of the first parak. Okay, chamisha tamen v'chamisha muadin. So there are five types of tam and five types of muad. Habehema eino muades lo ligach v'lo ligaf v'lo lishach v'lo lirbot v'lo livot. So behema, cattle, right, is not considered to be a muad, i.e. this is considered unusual behavior for cattle to go ligach, to gore intentionally, v'lo ligov, or to push with its body, right? So ligach is with its horns, ligof is with its body, velo lishoch, and again, this is causing damage to property or to animals. To talking about human beings is a little bit different. Okay, maybe we'll mention that later on. Actually, that the causing damage to human beings is a little bit different. But here we're talking about causing damage to other animals or to property. So again, it's not considered to be muad to do that. It's unusual to do negicha, to charge with its horns, to push with its body, lishach, to bite, lirvot, to stamp, I think is, velivot, to kick. Okay, so each of those are the five. Those are the five tamin. Those are the five different types of things where the animal is considered to be a tam. It's unusual for them to do that. And then we have chamisha muadin, right? Then we have hashein muedes leechol, right? It's normal to eat for an animal to eat es haro'ilo, whatever's normal for it to eat. What about if it's eating something unusual? What about if it chews on your Persian rug or something, right? Then what's the case? So we'll have to ponder that in a little bit. But certainly the Mishnah is explicitly talking about things which are normal. If it comes and eats your apples off your tree, haregel muedes lishbur b'derech hilucha. Normal for an animal to damage stuff as it's walking along, right? B'derech hilucha. V'shur hamuad. And again, shor hamuad, i.e. an animal which is already damaged, has already charged at someone three times, and therefore is now considered to be a muad. It's been warned, or the owner's been warned. Veshor hamazik b'rishus hanizak. And if the animal is causing damage in the rishus hanizak, in the damaged person's property, right, then again they're going to be considered muad. They're going to pay full payments. Veha adam, and a person muad la'olam, which is a Mishnah which we saw already. Did we see that Mishnah already? Adam Muad Lolo? Yeah, we did see that already. Okay. So that was earlier on. So again, all of those last five are considered to be Muad, and they're going to pay full damages right off the bat. And this is the part which I think is very, which again is different to what we've seen until now. And that is that we explicitly list five animals. We say Hazev, or six animals, I guess. Hazev, v'ha'ari, v'ha'dov, v'ha'nomer, v'ha'bardeles, v'ha'nachash. So if you have a wolf or a lion, a bear, a nomer, I think is a it's like a cheetah, leopard, yeah. And then what's a bardeless? I never remember. I never remember which one's which. I think one's.
It says here the bardeless. The Gemara will discuss what it means.
Oh, there you go. Okay, but I have a feeling in modern Hebrew, I think it's one of them's a leopard and one of them's a cheetah or something. Sorry. Yeah. I think in where, but in for a bardeless. Oh, for a bardeless, so maybe that's what it is. Maybe in modern Hebrew it's a cheetah. Yeah, so okay, so nomer is a leopard and bardeless maybe a cheetah, but as you said, Gemara will discuss exactly what a bardeless is. I like that you say it's got a picture. I'm assuming the picture is labeled, because I'm not sure I would be able to know the difference. Yeah, no, even if I saw them, I'm not sure. I have to ask Aaron. Aaron is my animal expert. He knows when I see a picture of a crocodile, he tells me, no, that's a caiman, he says to me, or something. Yeah. Yeah, so anyway. Okay, so I don't know the difference between them. And the point is that that all of those are considered to be, and presumably this isn't an exhaustive list, of anochash and a snake. They're considered to be muadin, right? We haven't explained actually. Sorry, hari elu muadin, right? These are all considered to be muad, i.e., they're all expected to cause damage intentionally, right? Even if you're not expecting it. So interestingly, I do think that actually they are expected to cause damage intentionally. Only here, let's see if who says that? Okay, so I have a feeling some say that they're considered to be muadin in the sense of the way that they are expected to cause damage. Oh yeah, here it's the Tosis over the page, the next page. Okay. So when we get back to the Nochosh later on, he says that this is only referring to them causing damage in the way that's expected to them. I.e., if you have a pet lion, right, then it's expected, and it goes for my dog, right? For example, then I pay full damages, right? Because that's expected. Okay. So I should have been more careful. But let's say it goes along and decides to headbutt my Ming vase, you know, for example. Then you know that maybe that wouldn't be expected. I mean, I'm not a lion expert, but presumably that's not something you would expect it to do, and therefore that would be considered tum, right? That would be an unusual way for it to cause damage, and therefore in that sense it might still be considered a tum. That's the opinion of Tosus. Others would disagree as well, but either way, our Mishnah is listing these as exceptions to the rule of tum and saying that they are muad from the beginning. And we have a debate. Rabbi Elazar disagrees. Rabbi Elazar says, no, bizman shahin b'nei tarbus einon muadin. If you can domesticate them, right? If you have domesticated them, then that's okay. Then they're considered to be tam. But v'hanachash muad la'olam. But a snake is considered to be muad la'olam, even if it's domesticated. Even if you have a domesticated snake, then it's still considered to be muad la'olam. Very interesting opinion of Rabbi Elazar. And I don't think we paskin like Rabbi Elazar. I think we are pretty sure we paskin against him, right? So again, you could say, I'm sorry, I've domesticated my lion, but the reality is, and you see this every so often, sad cases, you know, but in the news, they talk about, animals which get on very well with their trainers or things like that, you know, these wild animals, and everything's fine, until it's not, right? And then, so I guess that's the difference of opinion within this mission. Okay. Fine. So let's see what the Gemara has to say. So the Gemara is really going to spend quite a while trying to figure out what this mission is talking about, because particularly with the beginning part, where we say Chamisha Taman Chamisha Muadin, makes it sound like it's almost like a contrast, and the Gemara really puzzles over that. Mindikatani Hashein Muedes Leechol Miklal de Bechotzer, because again it has to match up. Miklal de Bechotzer Hanizak Askina. Since we said Shein is Muad, right, in the second five it was listed Shein as an animal eating my food was listed as one of the types of Muadim, then clearly we're talking about Bechotzer Hanizak. We're talking about in my property. Ukatani Behema in a Muedes Leshaleim Kule. Aval chatzi nezek mishalemus, right? So, sorry. Lecho mechlal du chotzer and kaskinon uktani, and we continue to teach further. Behema ina muedes. So, what do you mean? How can we then say a behema is not considered to be muad leshalem kulei? Aval chatzi nezek mishalemus, right? It's not considered to be muad to pay the full amount, but it is considered to be. It does pay half damages, right? There seems to be a contradiction between the two. So, So that basically, and therefore, that's clearly not talking about Bechotzer HaNizak, I think, right? The point is as follows. If we're talking about within the realm of the damaged party, right? You're now in my field, so then Shane, I understand why you're liable. But if the animal damages with Keren, if it, let's say, intentionally charges at my my dog, right? Then it should also be liable then, right? We said b'chotzer hanizak, anything that happens in my property, you're going to pay full damages for. Sure, tam is only in public property, right? In public in the public domain, but in my private domain, then you're not going to pay half damages. So over here, katani behema inim uedas l'shalem kule aval chatzin nezik m'shalemes. So who is that according to? That's money rabbonon he. That's according to the rabbonon. The omer mishune. If we're talking about that happening on my property, then whose opinion is that? Hamani Rabbanani, that must be according to the Rabbanon. The Omri Mashuna Keren Bechatzar Nizek Chatzi Nezek Hudu Mishalem. They say that it's considered to be tam even on my property, because it's unusual, very, very unusual damage. And therefore, even on my property, you're going to only pay half damages. Amos Sefer, but yet we contradict that, or seemingly contradict that, by saying at the end, Shur Hamuad v'Shur Hamazik b'Rishus HaNizak. We say that an animal that does damage in my property, for Adam Asan l'Rabbi Tarfon, that's clearly according to Rabbi Tarfon. Da'omar Meshune Keren b'Chotzer HaNizak Nezek Shalim Hudu Mishalim. So which one is it? Is it half damages that this animal is paying, or is it whole damages that the animal is paying? Let's do that outside one more time. In the first half of the Mishnah, in the section of Tam, let's put it like that. In the section where the Mishnah is talking about Tam, one of the Tamin is an animal the Tam damages is referring to an animal, doing all the things that we would expect. Goring or biting or stamping or kicking or all those things which we've talked about before. Okay, where is it doing that, right? If we're talking about in public property, so fine, so it all makes sense. But we're clearly not talking about public property, because the very next line talks about Shane, and Shane is exempt in public property. If my animal's walking in the middle of the street and you leave a bunch of grapes, lying on the table in the middle of the street, so my animal comes along to eat it, okay, so that's not my problem, right? It was in the middle of a road, you can't do that. Or I'm not going to be liable for that. But so we're clearly talking about the damage occurring in private property, in the chotzer anizak, in my private property. And if that's the case, then why is it paying half damages when it gores, right? So therefore, the Gemara says, if that's the case, if it's only paying half damages, must be according to the Rabbanan, must be there. That's their opinion. Half damages in the damaged person's property is still half damages because it's unusual. But the conclusion, the end, they must say for the second half, the later part of the Mishnah says that lists explicitly Shur Hamazik b'Rishus HaNizak, an ox which does damage in the Rishus HaNizak, in the damaged person's property, pays full damages. That's a muad. That's considered to be a muad. So that seems to be the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. So is it the Rabbanan or is it Rabbi Tarfon? So that's the first confusion of the Gemara, or the first suggestion of the Gemara is in. Right, so this is the second last line of the Omud. The Gemara responds and says, "In, yeah, okay, yes. All you've done is you've said one part is according to the opinion of the Rabbanon, one part is according to the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Yeah, that's correct. That's how we resolve this contradiction." To Ha'omar Le Shmuel L'Rav Yehuda, Shmuel says to Rav Yehuda, he says as follows, Shinano Shvok Masnisen. Shinano is like a term of endearment. It's a nice way of saying sharp one, Shinano. You know, you're okay, very good. You've noticed something, yeah, you're paying attention. That's great. But Shvok Masnisen says, don't worry about the Mishnah. Okay, don't worry about the fact that we're chopping and changing between opinions. V'tar Basrai, follow me. This is what it means. Reisha Rabbanon. Sefer Rabbi Tarfon. Yeah, half of this Mishnah is in the opinion of Rabbanon. Half of this Mishnah is in the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Not a problem. Okay, you're being too technical about the language of the Mishnah. Okay, bottom line, we all agree. We just have different. The Mishnah is made up of the different opinions, but in terms of the halacha, we all agree. Okay, Rabbi. So that's suggestion number one to try and resolve this contradiction. Now we have second suggestion. Rabbi Lezer Mishmei de Rav Omar. He suggests a different approach. Turning over, Kula Rabbi Tarfon here. The whole Mishnah is talking about, or is talking within the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. If that's the case, so what does that mean, within the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon? It means that if you cause damage on the other person's property, you should be full damages. You should be paying full damages. Reisha bechotzer hamiuchedes lepeiros. I think we've seen a similar answer to this, actually. So how can we say you're only liable? How can we say that you... right, why should Shane... Kula Rabbi Tarfon here, Reisha bechotzer hamiuchedes lepeiros leechod mehen, velozeh lishvarim. Basically, we've come up with this before. It's a funny type of property. It's a property where basically I have the damaged party has rights to bring their food in there, right? But both parties have rights to bring their animals in there, right? So because both parties have the rights to bring their animals in there, so since they're both able to bring their animals in there, it's only chatzi nezek, right? Because if your animal gores my animal, then that would be unexpected. You're only going to pay half damages because, again, we're both expecting to be in there. But what about eating my food? Eating my food, okay, you're still going to be liable for eating my food because I'm able to put that in there, right? I have the rights to do that, and you don't. You don't have the rights to put your food in there, and therefore you're still going to... Shane is going to pay full damages, and yet Karen... Right, the goring is going to pay half damages like a shertam, even within the world of Rabbi Tarfon. The Gemara spells that out. Delegabe Shane, Havile Chotzer Hanizak. With regards to Shane, it's considered to be the property of the damaged person. Or Legabe Karen, but with regards to goring damages, Havirushus Arabim, it's considered to be public property, and therefore you're going to treat it like a shertam and only pay half damages. Okay, so that's resolution number two. Okay, resolution number two. But immediately we jump on this one. Okay, we say it's no good, or we try to reject it. Shazram. Omer of Kahana, Amrisa Lishmai. Omer of Kahana, Amrisa Lishmai. I've heard as follows. Kamei de Rav Zvid Minaharda, in the name of Rav. In front of Rav Zvid from Naharda place in Babylon, Bavel. Right, in Babylon, va'omarli, he said as follows: Mi motzes mokmat la kula. How can you try and establish this entire Mishnah, Rabbi Tarfon, according to the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon? Hokatani hashein muedes lechol es haro'ila. It says that Shane is considered to be muad to eat everything haro'ila. Ro'ila in Shain ra'ila lo. So this is what we mentioned earlier, that the implication of the Mishnah is that Shain is only liable for eating what is expected, what it's expected to eat. But Shain ra'ila lo, if it chews on your ksus v'kelim, on your clothing, or on your utensils, right, or something like that, your pots, your pans, your or whatever it is, those sorts of things, then it wouldn't be considered to be liable. So Shein Roi Lolo, Rabbi Tarfon, according to Rabbi Tarfon, Ha'omar Meshuna Kerem Chatzar Nizak, Nezek Shalim Meshalim, according to Rabbi Tarfon, he says that even unusual damages, if you're doing unusual damages in the Chatzar Nizak, in my property, then you're still going to be liable. Okay, everybody following that? So it's an important machlokes between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Tarfon. It's not just limited to Shor Tam and Shor Mua, to a specific type of ox. What it's saying is that once you're in my property, according to Rabbi Tarfon, once you're in my property, you're basically tread very carefully, right? On my property, every single thing that you might do wrong is going to be liable, whereas according to the Rabbonon, no. If it's an unusual, obviously damages, you know, that are normal damages, you know, if your animal eats my food and shouldn't be doing that, then obviously then you're going to pay full damages. But if it's an unusual, really sort of unexpected, then the Rabbanan will still give you a break. Within the Chatzar Anizak, within my property. But according to Rabbi Tarfon, absolutely not. So therefore, so this is Rav Kahana's response to that. Right? Rav Kahana is basically saying that we've tried to establish the whole Mishnah like Rabbi Tarfon, but he's saying even still, even with our funny case of of dealing with a property where you know you're allowed to bring in your fruits and I'm allowed and we're both allowed to bring in our animals, even that type of thing, still doesn't really work because the bottom line is that that if your animal eats something which is unusual, Rabbi Tarfon would say you're liable for in its entirety, whereas our Mishnah implies that you're not, because our Mishnah only says shein mo'ad le'achol es ha'ro'ila, only that which is fitting, only that which is normal for it to eat. Only in that case is it considered to be mo'ad, the implication being that it's that everything else is not going to be liable. I'm conscious of time, it's already 10:45. It's already 10:45. I mean, we can keep going a bit. Truth is, it just sort of keeps going in the same vein. We're going to keep going through different cases, and all that sort of. Maybe we'll try and go a little bit further. Yeah, I think realistically, it's going to be. It'll take us at least another 10-15 minutes to get to the next sort of good stopping place. So basically, what we've had is we've had this Mishnah, and we've had five cases of Tam, five cases of Muad, and we're trying to basically establish consistency throughout the Mishnah. What the Gemara is bothered by is that if you take these five and five, they don't seem to. There's no sort of one. There's no consistency throughout them. You're changing places, you're changing opinions, you're changing this, changing that. So we're trying to establish that. So we've made two suggestions so far. The first suggestion is don't worry about it. Yeah, different opinions. Okay, it's not such a big deal, right? Relax. Mishnah's chopping and changing a little bit. It's still giving you principles. The second opinion was saying no, we're trying to establish the whole thing like Rabbi Tarfon, and the Gemara sort of rejected that and said even according to Rabbi Tarfon, the Mishnah doesn't fit so brilliantly, and then it's going to make another couple of suggestions afterwards. So the one that we've left off with is it's about to suggest that the whole Mishnah should be like the Rabbanon. So again, and then we're going to have to rework our way through each element of it. Okay, we'll leave it there for now. Okay. These parts are hard. Well, you guys can tell me what you think, but I find the hard part of these types of Gemaras is you've got to sort of hold all the facts, I think. You've got to sort of try and visualize it all, really try and hold the thread. It's, yeah. Yeah. But it's good. 2 weeks' time, please God. 8th of June. What is that, 8th of June? Is that right?